This is Pure Decking for Thursday. What the hell is it? The 17th, 2016. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and trying to figure out just what the hell everyone is thinking. I'm Morps tonight. Are you? What are you drinking?
Nothing really. Just water.
Well, Australian water might as well be.
Fantastic Datic. Water. It's no Flint, Michigan, though.
That's true. Static, what are you drinking?
I have a Not Your Father's Root beer with a side of Bacardi Black and a side of Woodford Reserve. All while taking two nerve pills and an oxycodone.
So you're in for a fun night.
Yeah, buddy.
Madman, what are you drinking and or taking?
I'm drinking a Newcastle Brown Ale. I have some lore tabs around here I could probably pop, but I wasn't planning on it. And I have some
mana
lidocaine back patches. They're amazing if you have a pulled muscle.
This place
Let's have
is
a contest.
A regular Skittles party.
Come on, Madman, I challenge you. Let's see who goes out first.
Alright, we'll have to check the dosages, and then I might have to catch up with you because I haven't taken any pills yet.
It's okay.
Well, if you fail, I haven't figured it out, this is a mature rated podcast.
Well, we routinely talk about overdosing, death, and horrible things being hacked. I mean, shit.
Try to show that doesn't say kids don't do drugs. Kids, make sure you check your doses before you do the drugs.
Oh, and if you're going to do something stupid, film it, put it on YouTube so we can laugh at you.
You also want to watch out between the interactions on drugs. Some amplify, some diminish, others turn your blood into pudding. The last one kills you.
Pudding.
This kills the crab.
Sorry, ma'am, he died of poisoning.
Somehow he managed to make... Somehow he managed to turn all of his blood into Jell-O. Like Bill Cosby's over there going, I don't know. I do not know.
The whitest Bill Cosby I've ever heard.
Yeah, I know. I'm terrible. I'm sorry. Not really. Anyways, so let's get on it here. So for the discussion, I got a couple of different articles. First is from New York Times. Second is from USA Today. Google and Facebook take aim at fake news sites. This is from New York Times. Over the last week, two of the world's biggest internet companies have faced mounting criticism over how fake news on their sites may have influenced the election. Oh, for fuck's sake. Okay. Well, so much for getting away from the election. Monday.
You picked the story. What do you mean so much for getting away from it?
Well, I know, but I wanted to talk about Google picking fake news. I don't want to talk about the election anymore. On Monday, those companies responded by making it clear that they would not tolerate such misinformation by taking a pointed aim at fake news sites' revenue sources. Google kicked off the action on Monday afternoon when the Silicon Valley search giant said it would ban websites that peddle fake news from using its online advertising service. Hours later, Facebook updated the language in the Facebook audience network policy, which already says it will not display ads in sites that show misleading or illegal content, to include fake news. We have updated the policy to explicitly clarify that this applies to fake news, a Facebook spokesperson said in a statement. Our team will continue to closely vet all prospective publishers and monitor existing ones to ensure compliance. Taken together, the decisions were a clear signal that the tech behemoths would no longer ignore the growing outcry over their power in distributing information to the American electorate. Facebook has been at the epicenter of the debate, accused by some of commenters of swinging the election. Google did not escape with the glare, with critics saying the company gave too much promise to fake news stories. On Sunday, the site Mediaite reported the top results on a Google search for final election vote count 2016 was a link to a story about a website called 70 News that wrongly stated that Trump won the who won was ahead of the Democrat. Oh, in the popular vote. Okay, so they're saying because some website said Trump was ahead in the popular vote, that's fake news.
For a while he was, and they're still counting the popular vote, there is a slimming chance that he could still win the popular vote.
I will love
That's
you
why
more.
The Electoral College
Stop.
Doesn't
Stop.
Certify votes until December 19th.
Stop!
If they're pointing out as
fake
news... Granted,
he wasn't here for the pre-show comments.
Right.
I don't want to argue politics. I really don't.
It's not politics. It's pointing out if they're calling something fake news when it is not factually fake, it is not fake news at
and
least
that's,
yet.
And that's the crux. That's the crux of my point in talking about these articles is how are they going to determine what is fake?
Well,
so
see,
I don't know that I need to read the rest of the article here, but basically Google and Facebook have both said they are not going to allow sites they deem as fake news to get ad revenue through their services.
Well, see, this show would still be good even if we were getting revenue, which we're not, because we're satirical.
Well, I'm giving off there are show notes on now. Granted, I need to fix the website so they're easier to find, but there are show notes for everything. I show all my links for the articles we talk about. I mean, sometimes we kind of embellish, but
well, that's what I mean. It's we're not just giving the facts; we're giving opinion. Therefore, this is satirical news.
It's well, not opinion. Isn't satirical opinion would be commentary. The Onion
yeah,
would
yeah.
be satirical.
This is news with commentary. I don't.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the news we're reading is at least as far as I can tell real. I mean, if I fall for a fake one, well, I fall for a fake one. But I mean, it's you know, I try to pick real ones. I try to get decent sources.
Looking through the article, but it doesn't. I haven't found yet where it's saying which sites they're considering fake.
Yep. They
right,
don't.
But.
They don't define fake news. That's the problem. So and then we get to the. The USA Today story basically says the same thing. Amid criticism that fake news sites contributed to misinformation, increasing polarization among the American public, Google announced Monday it will stop allowing fake news sites to use the ad software. This is also in combination with the whole Google putting verified or trying to flag in search results what's fake and what's not. And again, it's talking about the election, and I don't want to deep dive the election. I don't.
No, we're just talking about what's fake and what's not.
Right.
What's misinformation and in what is just poor reporting? What is lack of knowledge at the time to fully developing stories? So are we going to call CNN fake because they fuck up probably 25% of their stories on the fly?
Well, hell, why don't
Or is that just bad reporting?
And that's the problem. How do you define what's fake news? If you're going to go totally political, I mean, are they going to say Breitbart and InfoWars and all and you know some of the more hardcore right wing are fake news, or are you going to go over to HuffPo and call them fake news because they go crazy on the left sometimes?
When it comes to InfoWars, I think of it like this: Okay, they're constantly banging on about chemtrails, right?
Yeah. Actually, they moderated themselves a little bit especially with the election. They've kind of they're not quite in the yelling about clones inside of cows right now. I'm sure it happens every once in a while. I mean, Alex Jones is like head to explode if he doesn't start talking about something crazy every once in a while. But
I mean, I'm not shilling for them or anything like that, and I think the idea of chemtrails is batshit insane, but I do know we do cloud seeding. Prove them wrong. Show them the evidence that they're wrong. You can't get a hold of the evidence, and they can't show you the evidence that they're right. So it's just sketchy information.
On sketchy information like that, though, you put out your sources, and if you can't prove that you're right, there's kind of a reason why not to write a story. Because I can say, having electricity running through your home causes cancer. If I can't point to any studies showing the increase in electromagnetic fields in your house from electricity is causing cancer, then I'm saying shit. It's up to the person putting forth the argument to back up the argument. If they're saying chemtrails do X, then they have to point out a study or something showing chemtrails does X, or it's fake news. Or bad news, however you want to phrase it.
Why do they need legislation on critical thinking?
They don't need legislation on critical thinking. You just need to be able to read the article and be like, is this crap or is this credible?
Well, this isn't legislation. This is Facebook and Google doing this. This isn't the government.
And Facebook, now your personal feed, you feed into. So someone like me, I'll see Alex Jones's shit because I think it's hilarious. And I won't see very much, if anything, from the HuffPo. But Facebook's official news feed, it considers the Huffington Post, MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News as credible sources, and that's what they feed you. So 75% of their stuff is leaning or is completely left. And when they're sending out a verified story, it has to be on three of their news sites for them to consider it credible. So if Fox News is the only one covering something, it's not going to be considered a credible story because their other three sources won't cover it.
But again, and this comes back to the fundamental problem. You're giving out at least some guidelines of how to determine is this fake news or not. Google and Facebook, on the other hand, have not published how they're going to be determining if it's fake news. And it's a really sticky situation because, we know that they have political leanings, but let's try to take the politics out of it. The Onion. I don't know that The Onion has Google Ads, but I use AdBlock, so I'm not going to turn it off for that. But if The Onion is getting AdBlock, I mean, it's an obviously satirical site. They've been doing it for years. Everyone knows it's fake. But
it's real. Sorry.
Cows are vegetables. The Onion said so. I'm a vegetarian. I only eat beef. I don't think they're going to target The Onion or anything that's obviously satirical. Saturday Night Live is not going to be harmed. The people that are going to be harmed are Ben Shapiro, The Daily Wire. He does reporting. He also does commentary. But is he considered a real news source?
Yeah, I mean, how do you... You're going to have your blogger's license to be considered real news.
Oh, God.
Karen Stratton. She does actual news articles. She also does commentary. She has been published in traditional newspapers. Most of her stuff is YouTube videos and blog posts that are carried by anyone who wants to carry her because she doesn't care. Is she considered a news source?
Well, and again, they don't answer this question, so I guess we'll know in a couple of weeks after they kick this on if all their feeds are suddenly very one-sided politically, people they've learned.
That's the issue. Their generic feeds are already one-sided, and if they're going in and just saying, we're not going to give ad revenue to these other sites that are leaning the other way, it's not something that their customers, well, I'm not going to call them customers, their product is going to notice initially, because it's going to take a little bit for this ad revenue, I think, to dry up and for these content creators to either stop functioning or, if they find another way of monetizing, continue functioning.
I think it's one step closer to them actually doing full censorship of those
stuff they disagree with.
Quote unquote. Yeah, exactly. And then back to your point, no, the ad revenue, if they demonetize it, they're done. Unless, like you said, unless they find another way, like maybe Patreon or something like that, sure. But
YouTube has already been doing this for a little while on demonetizing people they don't like. And Facebook's making it more public, but it's Crowder's Facebook feed gets misplaced by Facebook on occasion. Same nice. Thing with the Daily Wire, with Ben Shapiro, with anyone that's super right-wing. They've already looked at other platforms and other ways of monetizing, because this is a slow creep. It isn't something new.
Right, and I guess my point is, because they don't define it, how do you know if they consider a site fake news?
Right.
If they just disagree with it, you know.
You
I mean,
look at who's if in you've charge got somebody, and what they agree with. That's legitimate news. Everyone else is considered fake news.
Well, I mean, but my point is, so if you've got somebody who's a hardcore lefty, they're going to look at Breitbart and say that's all fake. They're lying. you know, and if you got somebody who's a hardcore right winger, they're going to look at HuffPo and go, well, that's all fake. They're just making shit up and lying. You know, I mean, that's my problem. There's no definitive answer on what's considered, you know, I mean, they're saying fake news, but is that factually incorrect news or is it just shit they don't like? If it's factually incorrect and provably incorrect, that's different. But they don't define that. And how do you prove that? I mean, especially in stuff that's in dispute. Go ahead, Ari.
I'm trying to see how this is going to affect me. Because let's face it, the world revolves around me. it's not going to.
Do you use Google as your search engine?
Yeah, but mainly just for not for news or anything like that. I already have my set websites and places I go.
Well, if you're actually going to be doing Google, using Google as a research tool, the reason it's going to affect you is the sites with information that may be factually correct that just go against the political leanings of Google, they're going to be lower on the search list. And if you Google study on global warming, there have been thousands of them done by hundreds of institutions. If the ones that go against the prevailing narrative that Google likes are listed 10,475th in their search results, are you going to read them? Most people don't go beyond 3 pages of search results.
Then most people are fucking idiots.
Well, we know that.
I don't really remember going beyond much more beyond 10 when I'm just randomly looking for stuff.
10's probably the same for me, but it depends what I'm researching. And if it's a news story, I shouldn't need to go more than 5 pages in before the critical thinking has come to the answer that somewhat may be correct. And then I'll watch that story for the next couple of weeks to see if it disappears overnight or it stays around. Like, this, I'm desperately trying to figure out what's going on in South Korea, but no one's talking about South Korea. This is what I mean. The selective reporting is bullshit.
Well, and this raises the point. I mean, we need people to not rely on these two services. Well, three if you count Twitter, because they're talking about it too. But it really comes down to, because you've got these handful of sites that everybody's using, the problem is that there's not the, I guess, what's the word? It's not spread out. No, democratization. But I don't think I said that right.
Democratization?
Either. Thank you. That's the word I was thinking of. There's not the democratization of the sources. So everyone's using Google. Everyone's using Facebook. Everyone's using Twitter. So if there's not an alternative source and all three of them start filtering, you know, either one, you have people who realize that it's being filtered and they start using alternative services, and then what I'm advocating for happens naturally, which you would expect in an educated open market, but because people are dumb, as RU so, you know, correctly points out, you know, do we end up seeing these splits where lefties use one search engine and people on the right use another search engine, and it suddenly becomes a real chore to keep up with both sides of articles and stories?
And the problem with that is you're not solving the problem. If I'm going to a search engine that's always leaning right, then the issue is I'm not getting the whole story.
Exactly.
Search engines, and I don't know how search engines just need to be, here's a filter for what you're looking for, and dump everything. You have to sort through the ideology and find out what's right. And when I say right, what is correct. But they're not doing, well, Google's not doing that. I can't say none of them are doing that. I can't think of anything beyond really Google, Yahoo, off the top of my head. It's like DuckDuckGo. Is that still up?
Yeah, DuckDuckGo's still up. In fact, they've been getting a lot bigger.
And one problem with Google is not just the search results. If you've set up your blog and you're trying to put out free information, if you're depending on ad revenue, Google's not just going to hurt you by lowering your search results or putting you lower on the list of search results. They're going to, if you're not getting that revenue because they deem you as being false or being bad news or whatever, and you're factually accurate on everything you're reporting, that's crap.
I think we're running that gauntlet now, Madman.
I would agree.
All right. Well, we're just gonna have to wait and see how this shakes out because they haven't said how they're gonna determine. So
at the end of the day, they're gonna bow to whoever's giving them the most money.
Well, that's true.
I'm not.
We already know where that's coming from. What do you mean? Sure. Why not?
Because there's a lot of news organizations and media organizations that aren't bounding to
I'm not talking about news organizations. I'm talking about Google, Twitter, places like that.
When they're looking at that, are you looking at it as news? Because there are people funding newspapers and news organizations just to get out their slanted ideology.
I think of it more along the lines of, you know, these are organizations that, like, we're talking about the actual ad revenue, right? So these are organizations that are affecting the bottom dollar, the bottom line of, you know, newspaper X, Y, Z, whatever, doesn't matter who it is, okay? All of them are using Google in some fashion. And it's going to be affecting them. So Google, in turn, is going to affect that bottom line, you know, based on the, you know, whoever's paying them the highest dollar to make whatever policy.
Well, in that case, I kind of wonder, is Google's going to start running afoul of the monopoly laws here soon? I mean, if they're already talking about using their influence to filter what's considered real and fake, I mean, that's... was kind of the point of some of the monopoly laws, was to avoid that kind of shit.
Yeah.
So.
And they're, with Google's standpoint, they're getting money from the people that are placing the ads. Their revenue stream isn't being harmed by them filtering. They're just not paying other sites that are running the ads. Do you think enough of those sites generate a big enough traffic for Google to notice if they go out of business? And if ideologically they care?
I don't know.
Because on...
Go ahead. Hang on. Let's go ahead, Static.
I was just going to say, you're saying that Google is only getting its ad money as its source of revenue.
No, I'm saying Ragu. The Ragu commercials that are played through Google Ad, Ragu is paying for that. Now, let's go with Crowder's website. When a Ragu ad is played on Crowder's website, Google has already been paid by Ragu for that ad. Google is supposed to be forwarding a portion of that to Crowder because he's showing Google's ad. Now, if Google demonetizes the ad on his website, the ad is still being seen by one of his viewers or one of his readers. Google has already been paid for that. They're not paying him. Now, if that happens long enough, I would be removing Google Ads from my website. Now, the question is that loss of ad viewing big enough for Google to notice in its grand scheme of things?
Is restricting
that ideology worth it?
I think you're confusing Google AdWords and YouTube. Because on YouTube, you're correct. They probably still show the ads. The creator just doesn't get paid, and that is kind of crap. But you on YouTube, you're in their world. You're in their service. You're stuck. If it's your webpage and you're dependent on Google AdWords, and they decide not to monetize, I think nothing shows up because they would have a lawsuit on their hands if they're showing ads and then refusing to pay. Not that they don't do that. They just usually wait and say, "Well, we think you were cheating the system after the fact." So. Anyways, let's there's not much more we can say about this, so they actually say how they're going to determine what's real and what's not. So let's move on. First article I have for tonight is from ZDNet. Britain has passed the most extreme surveillance law ever passed in a democracy. The law forces UK internet providers to store browsing histories, including domains visited for a year, just in case the police want to see it. 2016, going on 1984, the UK has just passed a massive expansion in surveillance powers, which critics have called terrifying and dangerous. The new law, dubbed the Snoopers Charter, was introduced by then Home Secretary Theresa May in 2012 and took two attempts to get passed into law following breakdowns in previous coalition governments. 4 years and a general election later, May is now Prime Minister, and the bill was finalized and passed on Wednesday by both parliamentary houses. Civil liberty groups have long criticized the bill, with some arguing that the law will let the UK government document everything we do online. And it's no wonder, because it basically does. The law will force internet providers to record every internet customer's top-level web history in real time for a year, which can be accessed by numerous government departments, force companies to decrypt data on demand, though the government has never been exactly clear on how it forces foreign firms to do that, and disclose any new security features in products before they launch. Not only that, the law also gives the intelligence agencies the power to hack into computers and devices of citizens, known as equipment interfaces, although some protected professions, such as journalists and medical staff, are layered with marginally better protections. In other words, it's the most extreme surveillance law ever passed in a democracy, according to Jim Killock, director of the Open Rights Group. The bill was opposed by representatives of the United Nations, all major UK and many leading global privacy and rights groups, and a host of Silicon Valley Valley tech companies alike. Even the parliamentary committee tasked with scrutinizing the bill called some of its provisions vague. And that doesn't even account for three-quarters of the people who think privacy, which is, the law is almost entirely erodes, is a human right. There are some safeguards, however, such as the double lock system, so that the Secretary of State and Independent Judiciary Commissioner must agree on decisions to carry out search warrants. A new investigative powers commission will also oversee the use of the powers. During the uproar, the government's opposition failed to scrutinize any significant amendments and abstained from the final vote. Kellogg said recently that the opposition Labour Party spent its time simply failing to hold the government to account. The government has downplayed much of the controversy surrounding the bill. The government has consistently argue the bill isn't drastically new, but instead reworks the old and outdated Regulatory Investigator Powers Act. And it's to legitimize new powers that were conducted or ruled on in secret, like collecting data and bulk and hacking in the networks, which were revealed during the Edward Snowden affair. Blah, 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 blah. So pretty much Britain's intelligence agencies are allowed to do whatever the hell they want. And they're requiring ISPs to keep logs for a year, and any companies doing business over there have to decrypt data on demand and provide the government pretty much whatever the fuck they want.
How much data is that?
Enough that you probably ought to be buying stock in NetApp or EMC or Western Digital.
Because I know if you're just looking at my logs, is that just the ISP, the address of all the websites I'm going to? Or are they caching the content of what I'm looking at?
They're saying just the top-level websites, so they're logging in the domains you go to.
All right, so they're not seeing the articles, because that would be really bumping this up. But still, even if it's the domains, that's a lot of domains in a year. Even if it's not that much data per entry, that's still got to add up when it's everyone for a year.
Well, you can probably dedupe and compress a lot of that into databases, but you're right, that's a lot of data.
I feel sorry for the poor fucker who has to go through mine if we ever end up with that here on a really heavy dorking week.
I'm not sure how useful it would be, at least when you're looking at preventing crime, because it's the needle in a haystack with a haystack that's getting huge.
Well, and here's the real question, though. So this law says that the intelligence agencies can break into whatever they want, whenever they want, and access whatever systems they want, whenever they want. So if I design a network that they cannot hack into,
you have to put a back door.
Am I breaking a law? Can they kick down my door because they've decided, well, we determined your machine was encrypted because we tried to break into it? And it's like, well, if you had just asked, I would have let you look at it. But no, I'm now being arrested because my system was too secure. Is that real?
Yes.
Do you actually have a link to the actual bill itself?
If it's not in the article, then I do not, but I bet we could get it.
I'm looking. I, you know, that one statement there I don't believe anything that any reporter ever says.
Well, I also I think you're right because I think there it might be exaggerated because the only people they talked to about for this article were the rights groups.
Oh. Then it might not be we need a back door. It might be you have to give us this data when we ask, which isn't as bad.
It's still rough. I mean,
it's rough because it's forcing
it.
You to store it. But I think if they show up with a subpoena, they've already shown probable cause to get the data. And I'm not sure what's required as far as British law, but they're not that totalitarian, are they, guys?
We don't know because it's all secretive.
Yeah, that's part of the things they're doing with this bill is they're legitimizing secret decisions secret courts have made.
Then America's not alone in the FISA court idea.
Yeah, but our FISA court is supposed to only apply to foreigners. And I hate to say it, but if you're a foreigner, you don't have constitutional protections. It's not illegal. It may be immoral, and I might even go so far as to say it's immoral, but it's not illegal.
Well, you know, actually, Madman, I've been thinking about that one right lately, about the whole if you're foreign, you don't have constitutional protections, because of the way it's worded. The Constitution doesn't say you have a right to bear arms, you have a right to free speech. It technically says the government shall make no law infringing your natural right to free speech, to bear arms, you know, to not bear, you know, to be where you can't be forced to bear false witness, so on and so forth. So, you know, it's arguable on that one.
Our sovereignty does not expand to any country outside of the U.S.
That is absolutely true.
And there, if you look at the Federalist Papers, most of those do apply to citizens. Now, we grant them to everyone here legally, because if you've followed the rules to get here, you are under our protections. And courts have expanded that to include everyone pretty much in our country.
Sure.
Legal or not.
My point is the way it's written, not the way it's modern. Yes, I agree with you on modern interpretation, but the written actually just says the government shall make no law infringing, which kind of is implying that it's a natural right you already have. Now, if you happen to live somewhere that your government doesn't recognize that natural right, well, sucks to be you. We're not gonna do anything on that, but it does kind of imply that we shouldn't be doing shit to anybody in that regard. So.
Let me I'll try to do some searching. It's not gonna happen tonight, but let me find some of the Federalist Papers where they're discussing this.
Yeah, that'd be
because
fun.
Because we think our Constitution's just that, but no, it was debated and articles written on the actual meaning of it before it was ratified.
Oh, I know,
and
I know, dude.
With that
I'm not
we
arguing.
Couldn't spy
I just...
on other countries. Yeah, I know.
It's an interesting concept, and you could argue we probably shouldn't be spying on some of these countries the way we are.
I don't think we should, not because I don't think we can. It's just I think it's a waste of time.
Well, like maybe the IMF and the World Bank, we should be spying on them, but you know, Britain, Germany,
the World Bank and the IMF, yes, because I don't believe in
other countries' citizens should be free of your fucking prying eyes.
Majority, yeah, for the most part, I think that's probably true.
Well, we're meant to be mates, right? Australia and America, we got this pact thing.
The whole we speak English thing, yeah.
Yeah, like we have a defense pact and things like that.
Yeah,
we're meant to be friends. What are you doing, perving at my missus, you fucker?
Your missus might be hot.
You're essentially looking in my windows. It doesn't make it fucking right, though.
And in that argument, honestly, I think our allies should be low on the list. But
exactly.
We should still be keeping an eye on it. I would like to point out, prior to World War II, Britain, our longest standing trading partner and closest ally, was planning an American-Anglo war because they thought we might need to get our asses kicked. That was going on right up until Hitler decided to shoot somebody. Japan, that at the time was our third or fourth largest trading partner, and we were their largest trading partner, blew up Pearl Harbor. So spying on everyone may be necessary. Well, spying on everyone is necessary. You need to prioritize the use of your resources. Australia probably is not going to be attacking us. We really need to be spying on the Middle East.
Oh, no, you don't need to spy on the Middle East because you know they're attacking you.
Oh, yeah, they're advertising it. But still, you need to prioritize the use of your resources.
Well, I think so, and I think a lot of your resources, I think, if they're not being used in some Southeast Asian countries right now that are, let's just say, populated with a very large group of people who don't like to look at women in the eyes... yeah, they're getting a little bit uppity right now, maybe Indonesia.
Well, speaking of spying on everybody, let's go on to the next one here from the Objective-C blog. So it turns out that when Shazam on Mac OS X is toggled to off, it simply stops processing recorded data, but it keeps recording data. So for anybody who doesn't know, Shazam is a software service that you play a snippet of a song and it's supposed to tell you what the song is. The idea is if you're like on your phone and you're out and you hear a song on the radio or something like that, you play it and it'll, but they've got a desktop application too. So, you know, he goes through the full write-up here, but he was trying to put together an attack for Mac malware so that he could, you know, piggyback into legitimate webcam sessions in order to surreptitiously record the local user. In order to thwart the attack, he released a new tool called Oversight. Oversight's a free utility that alerts the user whenever a process attaches to the webcam or the mic or the internal microphone or anything like that. So it's proven quite popular. He designed tools such as Oversight with the goal of protecting users against novel attacks or yet to be discovered malware. So it's a little service that monitors for when the microphone or the webcam's flicked on your machine. Probably a good thing to have, especially if your, you know, machine has been issued by a school. that's a callback. But they figured out with this tool that Shazam was just kicking on the microphone and leaving it on the entire time.
Wow.
The only way to kill it was to kill Shazam.
Yeah, is that a software flaw or an executable left in there?
What they think it's not sending the data anywhere. It's not really processing it. It's just, you know, capturing. Mm. So they think it was a performance thing of just being able to click it on quickly.
Okay. So the engineer thought he was doing something good, and it turned out it could be used for...
I think it's more the engineer was lazy and just left the microphone on.
Okay. Well, good catch, whoever got it anyway.
Yeah, so they got a... they did get an update from... I didn't see this earlier from the company that makes Shazam. Thanks for getting in touch and bringing this to our attention. The iOS and the Mac apps use a shared SDK, hence the continued recording you are seeing on a Mac. We use this continued recording on iOS for performance, which allows us to deliver faster song matches to users. You are right to point out the SDK pulls the audio but doesn't process it on a Mac when it's toggled to off. They will look to address it in a future update. So, in other words, yeah, it still records, and because they're saying they use the same SDK for iOS, which means it does the same damn thing on your iPhone.
Interesting.
So, yeah, Shazam is constantly recording you if you have it on your phone. At least iOS and Mac.
Is it just sticking it in a cache, or how long
probably
are the recordings? Because if it's almost immediately deleting it, the only way this would be a problem is if somebody gets into it and just starts streaming what it's recording and storing it.
Or, you know, Shazam decides to start doing something with the data.
Well, Siri does the same thing. Android does the same thing. Amazon does the same thing. Yeah, right?
Well, you know, because you can't have enough people listening to your home 24/7, right?
Yeah, I mean, if they want to hear me masturbate, you know, that's cool.
But my pointing out, if it's just recording like a second and then it's being deleted so it has that space for the next second.
Oh, it's probably more than that, dude. It's probably, you know, because it's probably going into a buffer, so it's probably a pretty good chunk of RAM. I would bet it's probably minutes
and then it gets uploaded.
No, does it actually leave the device or is it staying on the device?
It only supposedly they only monitored data leaving when they were actually using the Shazam software, but that doesn't tell them what was sent, just that, you know, just that the data was processed, sent.
So it's actually make a connection. Is sending, and it's not just recording it and deleting it. It's sending it somewhere.
It's sending it. No, it's not sending it anywhere when it's idle. It only sends data when the program's active, but there's no guarantee that it hasn't you know, taken some of that data it's collected along with the data it's, you're expecting it to collect to do the service.
Okay, it's so like it could catch backup. Me murdering somebody and asking what song I'm listening to.
Well, because, you know, it's a catchy tune on the radio as you're, you know, swinging the axe. It's like, man, that's got a good beat to it. I got to figure out what that is.
Hey, but until
the
now...
the bodies hit the floor.
Nice.
Apparently, that's one of the features of Shazam. You can sing at it badly, and it'll still tell you what the song is. That's the thing, though, is if you have it on your phone, I mean, if it's constantly throwing crap in a buffer, it reasonably could be collecting chunks of data and sending it off whenever you use the app. So it reads like it's not. It reads more like it's just lazy programming. But, I mean, if it's made it this long without anybody noticing, who's to say they're not going to change the behavior? So it's still not kosher.
It's also running your battery down a little faster.
Yeah, that'd be true. Anyways, next article is from The Intercept. I don't know how I feel about The Intercept. I don't much care for it as a news source, but they occasionally have interesting articles. So.
The first time I'm hearing of it.
What, The Intercept?
Yeah.
Oh, the guy who Snowden gave all the articles to founded it, and they spent an insane amount of money putting it together, and they don't publish all that often. So.
Okay.
I just kind of, because of the way it was founded, I always kind of wonder about it. You know what I mean? It's like the guy who put it together was really slanted, but hung out in Brazil a lot. I think he was afraid to be arrested if he went back to the States because of all the Snowden stuff. But so top FBI lawyer argues against requiring warrant for data that tracks people's location. If law enforcement was forced to get a warrant to obtain information about a suspect's whereabouts from the phone providers, it would be crippling. According to James Baker, general counsel at the FBI. I don't know how we would handle that, said Baker, speaking on the panel of the American Bar Association's annual conference on national security law in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday. The executive branch would suffer from a huge amount of uncertainty and confusion while we are doing investigations. Did they have uncertainty and confusion 20 years ago when people weren't walking around with a tracking device strapped to their head?
I would like to point out, he already knows how they would handle it. They would get a warrant.
Yeah, the debate over protection afforded to location information launched several years ago and is likely to make its way to the Supreme Court, regardless of the new administration. Several decades ago, when law enforcement first began approaching the major telecoms for information about suspects, the law operated under a central theory known as the third-party doctrine. According to this theory, data voluntarily given to a company can be handed over to law enforcement without a warrant, because the users have no reasonable expectation of privacy once the companies have the data. Investigators have used this doctrine to obtain information about where people have been, who they've been talking to, what websites and they've been browsing. It's the position of the U.S. government, Baker said. We're exercising those authorities. While those authorities may have seemed simple when cell phones contained little more than contacts and billing information, it's no longer the case. Phones are now constantly pinging cell phone towers, tracking location every 6 minutes, which provides robust information about you, and as good as, not better than, the contents of communications, argued Magistrate Judge James Ornstein, another member of the panel. Ornstein, who serves the Eastern District of New York, made waves in February when he ruled against the FBI, which was attempting to compel Apple to decrypt information on a suspect's phone. Baker, on the other hand, suggested that the metadata and preliminary data, like cell tower information, is vital to early stages of investigations, helping the FBI decide where to devote its resources. Encryption is already creating roadblocks, he argued, and putting legal barricades in the way of getting information the Bureau can still access would be disastrous. Really? Disastrous? Again, I would argue, what about when people weren't carrying cell phones? How'd you guys operate back then? Or even
make
better,
them work for a living.
Even better, just on the off chance here, let's say your criminal's not a complete, you know, fuckwit, and leaves the phone at home when they're out doing their, you know, whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, just tossing the possibility out there that if you're not a complete dumbass and it's not a crime of passion kind of thing, if it's premeditated at all, you're probably going to know I should leave my cell phone at home. Or at least get a burner phone that's not really associated with me. I mean, or just be like, are you, and not have a cell phone.
Which I still think that's going to cost me down the track.
Well, if the way this is going, if the FBI is going to want to know where's your metadata. Encryption is already creating roadblocks. For fuck's sake.
You cannot
cripple encryption and still expect any kind of an online economy to work. If you want people to be able to buy shit from Amazon and Apple and Google online, you need encryption. Otherwise, there's no guarantee that my credit card information isn't going to be stolen every time I buy something. You want people to use the internet for anything other than porn and, you know, conspiracy theories, you need encryption.
I don't know. I think if you kill encryption, you might get rid of some of the conspiracy theorists.
The issue of whether or not requests made to cell phone companies for location information over long periods of time is considered a search under the Fourth Amendment has been making its way through the lower courts for years. Circuit courts have overwhelmingly ruled in favor of third-party doctrine. Party advocates argue this policy does not reflect the way people live their lives in the digital age, with cell phones constantly broadcasting their locations to make calls, send texts, and log into social media. On the other hand, some experts like Orrin Kerr, law professor at George Washington University, has held that the courts are obligated to continue to apply third-party doctrine as written to decisions, leaving the final ruling to the Supreme Court. However, the panelists agreed on one thing. The country will be stuck with this issue for quite some time. So third-party doctrine is based on the assumption that if you're turning data over to a company, you have no reasonable expectation of privacy. The problem here is that most people with their cell phones are either unaware completely or they think that that data is protected somehow. They have an expectation of privacy. Now, you may say it's not reasonable, but to many people, because it's automatic, they're not actively saying, yes, send my data to AT&T, yes, send my data to Verizon or Sprint or what's the one in Australia?
Telecommunications? Telstra. Yeah.
Telstra
or Optus.
You know, you're not sitting there constantly hitting the button saying, yes, send my data to them. Or even, you know, on a regular basis. It's just your phone fucking does it. It's part of how it works, but I think most people have an expectation of privacy on that data. Am I wrong?
No, I think so. I think most people would be shocked and embarrassed if they thought that all their phone calls are being listened to and things like that.
Dad, people say some think,
pretty
you,
crazy
you
usually, shit.
You usually try to call me out on this stuff.
I'll have the same comment I've always had before. Go for it. I have no problem with if they want to record and listen and track and do whatever they want to with my information. It's boring, and, you know, it's a snooze fest. I'm not going to do anything that's stupid with my phone.
Yeah, you leave the phone at home when you're going out to chop up the bodies. I mean, we all
that's
know this.
Right. But even still, in all seriousness, though, you know, the part that gets me, and not to call any of you all out, but I am kind of calling you all out, yeah. You're arguing for the people who are committing crimes. Really, at the end of the day, if you really, really think about this, who is really hurt by them not having a warrant to come search your phone?
Potentially anyone who the government currently disagrees with. Now, whether that disagreement is valid in the case of murder, rape, theft, you know, criminals, or simply having fallen, you know, you're now part of a unfavored party. For example, they decide they're going to come get the guns, you know, to pick a common conspiracy theory.
Sure. But now you're going from factual to Looney Town side of things, okay? Right. The conspiracy side.
It's not Looney Town conspiracy. It's simply conceptual. They could do this.
They could.
Our government has a fairly good history when it comes to this, but it's not perfect. They rounded up everyone with slanty eyes and put them in camps in World War II.
They used the IRS to target anyone who was opposed to Obama's agenda in 2012.
So it's not that your point is valid, Static. I'm not dismissing it. I'm just simply saying the record is certainly way better in America than some other countries we could name. But making it easier for them, it's like this law they just passed in Britain. I mean, they basically, the government can walk in and take whatever the fuck they want, and
right.
just have to kind of hope that they don't decide to suddenly determine that. I don't know. I mean, yeah, you want to pick a Looney Tune example. Everyone with, I don't know, what's an app? WhatsApp installed is now guilty of sedition. We're going to pull that database and use your phone to figure out where you are.
right. No,
they do that shit in China, dude.
And now, of course, we got a First Amendment, so the free speech angle of it is not as rough of an argument as it would be in some place like a China. And Static does have a point that the majority of it's boring data. I'm not going to do anything that I'm actually concerned about my phone being tracked. If I was concerned about them tracking me, my phone, I wouldn't have a phone. I'd do like RU does. But how do I explain this? I don't like the concept. I get it, and it does make it easier for them to go after criminals, but it also makes it a lot easier to be abused. With the big databases that Snowden was talking about, there's, you know, they caught people tracking their girlfriends and spouses with it. They're not going after criminals. They're going after people just because they're bored or they're wanting to spy on their family. It has been abused already is kind of the point I'm making. Maybe not to the extreme of, you know, rounding people up and putting them in camps. Go ahead, man.
So say the other issue is how else can this be applied with the third-party doctrine? I might not have much of an expectation of privacy when it comes to my location with my cell phone. Because I actually know it is pinging a tower, and me having the cell phone could be considered
consent. You understand
consent.
How it works, yeah.
But my financial records aren't stored at my house. Do they have to get a warrant for those? Because we say they do. If I wanted to open up a business, and that business is like a bank or a financial institution that actually generates lots of documents, banks don't keep those. Those are stored at Iron Mountain or other facilities designed especially for storing secured documents in a place where they're not going to catch on fire or be affected by a flood. Can they go to those storage facilities without a warrant? I'm just wondering how much farther could it be pushed? And I do know that's the slippery slope again, and it is a logical fallacy. But if they're saying third-party doctrine applies to any third party, I do have expectations of privacy with a lot of third parties. Are there exceptions to this? Namely, financial institutions or medical professionals?
Well, medical, we know there's a carve-out because that one's always been kind of protected and, you know, lawyers. But it's an interesting discussion, really, because Static has a good point that you're making it harder for them to capture criminals, people who are actually hurting people. So
what if you think some things that government thinks is a crime, you don't think it is a crime?
Well, and that's you know, that's the other side of the argument. That
because we have a lot of redacted stuff we're not allowed to look at, as in print media and things like that, because it's deemed either pornography or, you know, it's on the banned list. Video games and things like that.
Or they just disagree with it and they flat out lie.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, you can't have these WikiLeaks emails, but the media can.
And there
that,
are
that was just said by an idiot.
Yeah, I know.
There are places you can go to swap certain items that you shouldn't have.
Like, and depending on those items, I do think the cops should know where those spots are. I don't want people to show up and be like, hey guys, do you want to swap this porn of a two-year-old?
No, they're not swapping porn. It's banned video games, copies of shit like that, man. You know, outlawed comic books, outlawed chemical textbooks, things like that.
That's one thing that we don't really see in this country because it's hard to outlaw any of those things.
Go ahead, Static.
Just a quick question is, why is the... Let's just use video games, okay, as an example. Why is a video game outlawed?
Because it's deemed either too violent or there's sexual content.
Right. By the organization, right? So the people... I apologize, I'm ignorant of this of Australia, but are you all a democracy?
Yeah, they're a democracy, a parliamentary democracy, I believe.
So under the Westminster system.
So can't you band together and elect new people?
The politicians don't ban it. The censors do. The censors are a group of people that are chosen for 1 year to review all content coming and give it a rating.
But your government is the one doing the censors.
The technical answer would be yes, but it would be difficult.
Look, it's depending on which government's in, the censorship will fly from one side to the other.
Real loose or real strict, yeah.
Yeah. When we get the Christian conservatives in there, shit just starts getting banned like there's no tomorrow. I mean, we did 500 books in 1 year.
Well, I remember
that's pretty impressive.
I remember you freaking out when we got you a copy of Postal, too.
Exactly.
You were like, oh, fuck, I can't get caught with this.
I was genuinely shitting myself because people who had that were getting in massive amounts of trouble. It's same as when I was when Fox showed me how to get around the Left 4 Dead 2 censorship. That was fantastic.
You're shooting zombies. How the hell are they? There's nothing explicit in that game.
They're people
violent.
Yeah, it was demonic, so it was considered Realm of the Devil, therefore Christian bandit. Yeah.
Wow. See, I hate the concept of banning media. I mean, you're just trying to ban ideas at that point, and that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's actually a good example for what we're talking about here, because let's say you have, an app on your phone like a Postal 2 or some game, since we agreed on video games, and, you're in Australia, and they determine that that game is now banned. It doesn't meet censorship. It's too violent, or it shows tits or something. And, they can track the location of your phone, so they're going to come take that phone because it has this app, and we know you have this app because we have your records for the past year.
Oh, dude, they could retro ban shit, too, like Manhunt. That was retro banned after 6 months of being released.
But you legally bought it, legally played it, and it was banned.
Oh, you're asked to return it for a full refund.
And if you didn't?
Well, I don't know. I've still got my two copies.
I'm just wondering what happens to somebody if they're caught with banned media.
I don't know, and I don't want to fucking find out, dude. That's all I'm saying.
In other words, shut up.
Man, you should have seen me. Every time I come back from the States, man, coming through Australian customs, I'm sweating fucking bullets because the books I have in my bag. Not because I've got drugs up my ass. Not because I'm coming back from
a
child
that.
Sex.
That's normal.
Party or something like that. No, because I've got comics from Gen Con. Fucking crazy. So,
all right. Let's...
I think in America, your argument works, analog. I think in other countries where things get a little bit iffy when it comes to knowledge and video games, things like that. I'm not going down the realm of pornography. That's for each state to decide. But when it comes to books and things like that, that aren't of pornographic nature, I don't think they should be banned. And I think every citizen should break the law.
Yeah, I agree with your statements that within the realm of the U.S., this FBI lawyer, right, who was arguing against requiring warrants, I think was fully within the right frame of mind. You're right, in other countries, no, because you all don't have the same setup that we do. As far as the Constitution and whatnot, so freedom of speech, I think covers some of that. But I'm also with you on the same thing. I think people should break laws based upon their own personal conviction, and rules are there to be broken. I've always been a proponent of that.
I don't think rules are there to be broken. I think if the rule is wrong, you should break it and remove it. Because a rule is there to help you. There should be a rule, thou shalt not steal. That's a good rule. If I work hard and buy something, I shouldn't worry about somebody coming in and taking it from me. if the rule is something that people are morally all right breaking, then it shouldn't be a rule. You should just remove it.
But then you get into personal opinion at that point.
Let's all agree. Disagree, all right. But not agree, and back to the echo chamber.
Yeah, I don't know. I just...
That is going to be my word for 2016, dude.
Echo chamber?
Echo chamber?
Yep.
I want to build an echo chamber. I hear everyone in there agrees with me.
At the end of the day, it is a slippery slope no matter which way you look at it.
And the thing with the slippery slope is, yes, it's a logical fallacy, but we're talking about government. They're not exactly the most logical bunch.
No.
So,
I would have an easier time saying, go ahead, feds, spy on us, if they could point to it being successful.
True.
That's a fair point.
True.
All right, let's let Madman wrap up on that story there and go to this next one from Yahoo. Philadelphia, a federal judge has ordered the FBI and other federal agencies to turn over any potential evidence they spied or evidence they spied on Occupy Philadelphia protesters. That is an awkwardly written sentence. It's from the AP, though, so I'm assuming somebody at least spot checked it. The FBI, CIA, and the National Security Agency have 60 days to comply with the order from senior U.S. District Judge Burley M. Schiller. The order follows another right-to-know case that was revealed the FBI was monitoring Occupy Wall Street activities in New York and the spinoff efforts in Florida and Alaska. Civil rights lawyer Paul Hetzniker? I'm not sure how to say that name correctly. Hopes to learn if the agency's surveilled demonstrators who encamped outside Philadelphia City Hall for 7 weeks in 2011 protests the income inequality. The FBI has turned over seven redacted pages in response to the right to know lawsuit. The judge plans to review the unredacted FBI document and inform the and information for the CIA and NSA to determine if material should be made public. The rest of this is just kind of backgrounder on this. It's a right to know case. They're basically suing the government, saying we want any information you have on us. It's a variation of a freedom of information. And they're basically wanting to know if the FBI was spying on Occupy Wall Street. Now, here's the fun part. I think the FBI, now, maybe not the CIA and the NSA because it's, not foreign. I think the FBI is doing its job if it's checking out some of these more radical protests, or even maybe the not-so-radical protests, just to, sure nobody's, in cults, killing people, doing crazy shit, right?
Depends on how they spied. If they just sent FBI agents dressed in civilian clothes to go through the protest and talk to people, might say that's bad, but it's a public place, and they're getting a feel for what the people want. That's completely fine, and people would call that spying.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing for them to be spying on, to use the phrase, these organizations, especially when they're, large numbers of people invading government buildings and the like. It does say about 80 people were arrested during the eviction, and other key demonstrations were later acquitted. Hetzniker said the city this year agreed to pay $200,000 to settle lawsuits filed by some of those arrested, because apparently their civil rights were violated. But
it depends on the protest. You do actually have to file for a permit to occupy certain government property, like the parks they were in. So those people, they were arrested. They were legitimately arrested. They should have filed the permit.
So I think, and of course this gets hairy real quick because they're not talking about particular individual protests and we don't know the details of it. I don't think there's a problem with at least FBI, since they're supposed to operate domestically, checking up on these groups. I mean, this goes back to what we were talking about. If I were to find out, I don't know who's the most unlikely, that Big Brother is secretly working for the FBI, because that wouldn't be ironic, to monitor our group's activities to make sure that we're not, trying to restart the Weather Underground or something.
We're all screwed.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if Big is an acronym agency, he's broken a lot of fucking laws.
Well, he's just trying to gain your trust, right?
Yeah.
And, anyways,
but really, Occupy Wall Street should have fallen under the EPA and the Parks and Wildlife Acts.
Yeah, there's that.
Because really, all they did was went and fucked up the environment for 7 weeks.
So, I think it's okay for them to check up on these large organized groups. I mean,
it's a little rough,
but I do think that's part of their job, isn't it?
It is part of their job, and it depends on how they were spying. And I'm sorry, are you finish your thought before I jump in again?
No, it would be negligent for a government not to check up on a movement. Really. Especially one that large and that that almost spontaneousness is something that, you know, most governments would be worried about. Especially, like, it could have happened like an Arab Spring, you know? Yeah. Starts out with a couple of hundred people. Next thing the government realizes, there's a whole fucking mess of people pissed at them.
So, I'm okay with them checking up on this. Now, if they're going to start tracking people's cell phones because they're members of a group, I'd like to see warrants. But, anyways, go ahead, man.
As I say, it depends on how they were doing it. If they're just walking through the crowd or even going and camping out with them, it's all being done on public land. And most of those, they didn't have the permit, so they couldn't say, you're not a member of this, go away. That's completely fine. Now, if by spying on them, they're listening to phone conversations, as in tapped the phone, not just standing next to a person while he's talking in a public place, but like wiretaps, surveillance of homes, I think they would need a warrant or something like, or it's not the warrants when you're doing the search. Somebody tell me, what is it when you get the okay to actually follow somebody around for surveillance?
Is that a writ?
It might be a writ. But either way, they need to file the paperwork if they're tracking people outside of the protest or listening into their phone calls. But actually just going into the protest and even recording, that's fine. It was done on public land. These are people with no expectation of privacy in that situation.
So, yeah, the quote from the lawyer here is, the government should not be investigating its citizens simply because they've raised their voices in dissent, whether it's against the government or corporate policy, Hexenegger said Tuesday. Which, true, they have right to free speech, but I'm not saying stop them. I'm just saying it's okay to look into it and make sure that this isn't turning into, say, a riot or something else. You know, if it's just a protest group, you know, just, you know, hey, you can check and make sure it's just a protest group. There's nothing wrong with that. That's their job. So, anyways, let's go to this article because RU sent me this. It's from abc.net.au. Link thrown out. Boom. Ah, shit. Boom. Apple's rejection of an indigenous app described as a symptom of digital colonialism. God, that headline just hurt to read. Digital colonialism. Park ranger turned app developer Malika Jade said she could not believe what she was reading. I was fairly shocked. She said, God,
I'm sure she said that.
Oh, hang on. Let's get the action. I was fairly shocked, she said. On the day her company's augmented reality storytelling app became available to the world, things did not go to plan. The InDigital storytelling app was developed with senior traditional owners in Jabiru and uses image recognition technology to provide users with a digital experience of traditional stories. The first content was published through Google to Android users without incident on Wednesday. That's because Google doesn't do anything beyond basic malware checks. I don't think they even do a lot of that. They just run it through some scanners before it gets published. It was accessed by indigenous people from Borino to Barbados all over in New Zealand. There were non-indigenous people in Ireland telling me it was great, Ms. Jade said. But an email from Apple informed her that the app, which won praise and grant funding from the Department of the Prime Minister and the Cabinet, did not meet its requirements. After passing several stages of the App Store review process, Ms. Jade said the company ultimately issued feedback describing the app's usefulness as limited. We understand that there are no hard and fast rules to defining useful or entertaining, Apple's response read. Their response advised Ms. Jade to review the app's concept and incorporate different content that complied with the App Store review's guidelines. The concept is to allow indigenous peoples to share our stories in the digital economy in the way we want to share them, Ms. Jade said. The app will hold 80,000 years of indigenous scientific knowledge passed and law passed down through thousands of generations. It's a big app. That's all. 80,000 years worth of indigenous scientific knowledge. That's a...
You can take that any way you want.
That means hearsay. Writing isn't that old.
What's more compelling than indigenous cultural knowledge systems presented in augmented reality in 3D? So Apple basically kicked it back, saying we don't think this app's going to do well in the App Store, and they're freaking out.
It's just a really bad app, and it's got nothing to do with anything else. So yeah, the only reason I that drew me to that story this morning, it was like they're having a shit fit calling it racism when it's just a really bad app.
Could they market shit you probably don't want to buy and just throw it up in the App Store?
Well, I mean, you know, they're calling it digital colonialism, where the digital cultural expressions of indigenous people are required to fit into non-indigenous parameters. Well, that Apple's told a lot of people to get bent when it comes to putting apps in their store.
I mean, my only problem with that is, can you buy an app for an iPhone that's not in the Apple store?
No.
That's my issue. If I can't choose to do business with someone else, you shouldn't be able to choose whether or not you do business with me.
You can technically jailbreak the phone and get other apps on it, sideloading them and the like. But as stock, as sold, no. The only way to get an app on the store is through the app, iPhone, or through the Apple Store. But the thing is, that's common knowledge. That's like Apple doesn't hide that when you buy an iPhone. You know, they advertise the walled garden as a feature.
If it's advertised, you know what you're buying.
Yeah, they don't hide the fact that if you're buying an iPhone, you accept that the only way you're going to get an app on that iPhone is if it went through Apple, and they sell it as, you know, we make sure it's safe and that it fits a user experience and that it's a good app. You know, and you know, if you've ever trolled through Google Play looking for apps, you'll know there's a lot of shit out there, because they don't really – all they do is run some malware checks on it, and even then they don't usually pull apps unless enough people complain.
Oops, look up.
What?
Being monitored.
Well, here, let me get my pants off so they can monitor me properly.
If it's not malicious, I think they should just label it crap you probably don't want to buy and throw it on the store. should just be a section. This isn't going to hurt your phone. It's just shit. Feel free to buy it.
And the thing is, Apple has a history of this. They've got all kinds of odd guidelines, and they'll just reject apps for any reason. So this isn't new. This is just somebody ran afoul of these Apple policies, and when they didn't get their way, they called it racism. So
that's all I was pointing out.
I want to find out how many white people have been rejected. Morps, have you been rejected yet?
By Apple?
Yes.
No.
Okay, then it could be racist. That other person didn't sound like a honky. They used the phrase indigenous. Everyone knows honkies aren't indigenous to anywhere.
I'm trying to move on to Digital Dojo because the conversation has now used the word honky.
The floor manager is giving us a wind-up.
So, anyways.
They need to put the kitty balloons back in.
All right. First article I have for Digital Dojo is an article on G-Hacks. Improve Windows 10 with one-click batch files. Now, I've been playing with these. Pretty much, they've put together a nice collection of batch files that make a bunch of changes in Windows 10 rapidly. Registry changes, policy, turning things on and off, that kind of thing. So, mostly when I played with them, I've been fairly happy with the results. You download the zip file. It's a passworded zip file because it's got a bunch of system stuff in it, and so transferring over the internet, a lot of antivirus software tends to freak out because it's making system calls. But when you unzip it, I haven't had it actually trip any AV, but I understand why they encrypted it. But they've got the password right there on the page, so it's no big deal. It's called the Pleasant Windows 10 Collection. and it's just got a bunch of bat files. You just double click them and they go through and set a bunch of settings, like disable the lock screen, disable forced reboot after upgrade, disable Cortana completely, disable automatic updates, disable automatic app updates. Turn on advanced explorer settings, enable secure edge, enable malware defender. So, you know, it's got basically a bunch of one-click bat files to like hide OneDrive, hide Cortana, turn Cortana off, turn Cortana back on. So, one, it's just a nice collection for customizing Windows 10 quickly, especially on new installs. And two, if you're curious about maybe setting up some automation in Windows to turn things on and off, you could pick apart these bat files and use them to build other things. So, because bat files are just text. I definitely think they're worth exploring if you use Windows 10.
I haven't actually fully looked through to see what all Windows 10 does.
It puts a new skin on it, includes the new DirectX, and adds an app store, and starts collecting telemetry on how you use your computer to send back to Microsoft.
Oh god, they see that I watch movies, read news articles, and play video games. They're going to use this as an argument for dumbing down my PC. Just because I let it live its life as a moron doesn't mean I want it to be. Damn it.
No, no, we see from your usage habits, sir, you should really just buy an Xbox.
Oh god.
I have trouble getting Netflix and some of the streaming sites to work on it. Netflix is actually really good.
I don't think Microsoft actually knows what they want to do with Windows anymore. I think they had a plan of trying to turn it into a software as a service subscription model, and the telemetry was to help them sell apps, but that backfired because most people don't want to use their desktop PC like it's a tablet. They just want to use it like it's a computer. So I think they don't know what to do with it now.
I don't know about most, because isn't this pretty much Apple's plan for the past forever?
Yeah, and they still haven't done it. They've made some movement on getting some of the iOS features into macOS. Like, they've started merging a lot of the SDKs in the background. They've tried to make the Mac interface more iOS-like, but you know, it's been years that they've been trying to do this, and people still want to use a desktop computer like it's a desktop computer. You know, that's why Windows 8 backfired so badly, and Windows 10 is, you know, got the desktop in it. Is Microsoft figured out most people don't want that shit? At least not on a desktop. They don't mind it on a tablet because its use model is different. Tablet, you're sitting on a couch and you've got the one small screen. On a desktop, you want to, you know. You don't want to work a touchscreen interface with a mouse. Most people don't. I don't. I don't like having a touchscreen keyboard come up when I'm trying to play a game because it thinks I need input. You know? I mean, it's silly. So, that and the fact that that keyboard on my Windows tablet takes up like over half the screen, so now you can't even see where you're typing. But, anyways. So, the last article I have for Digital Dojo is Metasploitable 3 has been updated, and Rapid7 took it over. They've made a new version of it, and the really cool part is that they've got some instructions on here for building it, so it's actually a virtual machine, and it just, you've got some software you have to install, like VirtualBox and Vagrant, but it'll download everything and build the virtual machine for you, and then they have a wiki page on their GitHub here that lists all the vulnerabilities, and this is the cool part. It's not a walkthrough. It's not like, okay, here's how to do this. It's, here's the port that's open, here's the vulnerability that it's vulnerable to, here's the Metasploit modules. Good luck. It tells you the service, it tells you the Metasploit module to use, but it doesn't walk you through it. I think that's awesome.
I think it's good too.
Because if you want to practice or see how these modules work, or maybe just, you know, play around, it's a way to do it. And you don't have to use the wiki page that tells you the ports, but because it's not a walkthrough, it's not like, you know, going, here's how you do it, click this, click that. It's just, here's the module, best of luck. I mean, that's a, you know, they're taking discovery out, but you've still got to do the attack on your own, which, you know, it's a learning tool, so that's probably the best way to do it. So, anyways, we're coming up on an hour 30, which means we had, but the conversations were, especially on the searching and the FBI stuff, was actually really good, so I didn't want to cut that off too early. So that's all
do
I got.
Do they have another module for the searching aspect as well, or have they not put that out yet?
Module for what, Metasploit?
Oh no, not the Metasploit module. The practice. Do they also have like a different tutorial type thing for the search, or is it just here's how to play with Metasploit?
Oh, there's tons of guides out there telling you how to use Metasploit.
Okay.
So no, they're just saying, okay, here's the Metasploit module to use. Here's the service that's running in the VM, and you know sometimes they'll have credentials listed, sometimes they won't, because some of the attacks require credentials. So, it's more practice in using Metasploit and attacking different services and seeing how the system reacts when you do that. It's not, you know, a total how to attack tutorial. It's only one part of it. There's no discovery in there. It's, you know, they're giving you the credentials for the services that you need credentials for. So there's no getting passwords. It's not a capture the flag scenario. It's just purely punching bag. So, although I guess you don't necessarily need a list of how to. I guess it's a punching bag with targets painted on it would be a good way to good way to describe that. So, you know, shape of a man, targets on it. So, you know, here's how to hit in the head. Here's how to hit in the chest. Here's how to hit in the groin. I mean, you know. Anyways, that's all I got. You guys got anything else you want to touch on before I play the Pac-Man sound here?
I think Pac-Man has died.